everyone. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Mormon Channel Daily, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm your host, Lisa Hollinger. I know you've been excited for today's episode because I announced yesterday that we're going to be interviewing Scott Barrick, who is the general manager of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. I wanted to start off, since we're going to be talking about music, with a quote from Jack R. Christiansen, and I found this in The New Era from April 1984, and this is what he says. He, Satan, is the champion of all liars and does not care one bit about you or me. His only desire is to seek our misery. Of course he would use music. Without question, he knows that music is one of God's greatest tools for good ever created. We must be aware that it is one of the most important and powerful influences in our lives. So if he has this knowledge, don't you think he could use music as one of his greatest counterfeits of all time? After all, isn't listening to music one of the first things we do each morning? One of the first things we do when we get into a car? And one of the last things we do before we go to bed at night? Actually, everywhere we go, from the doctor's office to the supermarket, music is being programmed into our systems. In that same article, he quotes the First Presidency, who made a statement in 1973, and they said, "Through music, man's ability to express himself extends beyond the limits of the spoken language in both subtlety and power. Music can be used to exalt and inspire or to carry messages of degradation and destruction. It is therefore important that as Latter-day Saints, we at all times apply the principles of the gospel and seek the guidance of the Spirit in selecting the music with which we surround ourselves." Knowing of the power of good music, I thought it would be fun to bring in one of the leaders of a group of musicians that are doing a lot of good. I'd like to welcome into the studio today Scott Barrick, who is the general manager of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Scott, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Lisa. Happy to be here.
So glad to have you with us. Tell us what it's like to be the general manager of the choir, and what does that title mean, and what do you do?
My job with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is, generally say, to be in charge of the business and legal affairs. So I'm kind of on the non-creative side of the work. Mac Wilberg and Ryan Murphy are our artistic directors. They handle the music direction. But my job is to help them be freed of administrative responsibilities and to focus on the music-making aspect of the choir while we take care of the business part of the choir. And the choir is, in reality, a business, and it's run that way.
So tell us some of the things that would include on a day-to-day basis, for example.
Well, my responsibilities run the gamut of being in charge of the choir's recording label and the distribution that we do with our partners, most recently with a new recording that we're making with Deutsche Grammophon, which is the largest classical recording label in the world. I also am responsible for all the contracts when we have guest artists who come, when we go on tour, we have venues, we have all the responsibility for intellectual property clearances. I manage the investment of the choir's portfolio. The choir has funds that it earns through its recording and touring obligations, and we build an endowment, and we try to run the choir off of the earnings of the endowment so that we're not a burden to the church in that regard. We pay for all of our own touring, for example. So that gives you kind of a broad spectrum of the responsibilities. It ranges from marketing to business to public relations to webs and social media and all those kinds of things.
There's one other question that I wanted to ask you, and that's the role of Ron Jarrett, because I know he's the president of the choir. So how does his role differ from what you do, from what Mac Wilberg does?
President of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is an integral part of our leadership. He reports directly to President Monson, and he is our leader, an ecclesiastical leader as well as an equivalent of an executive director, which is usually a position that's staffed by church leaders. Ron is also himself a volunteer, so it's a tribute that in a volunteer organization like the choir, the leader is himself a volunteer. Now, Ron has the distinction of being the first president of the choir who sang with the choir before being appointed. So he was
a member
of the choir for 8 years. Then after he hit the retirement age of 60, he served as an assistant to President Matt Christensen for 3 years. And then he was called on a public affairs mission to Frankfurt, Germany with his wife, where he was serving at the time that he was called to be the choir president. So he oversees all of the aspects of the choir. The choir paid staff report up through him he provides the direction and leadership for the choir as a whole.
An amazing group you have.
And when I should add that when I say the choir, this is the shorthand that we use, and in all of our members refer to the choir regardless of which ensemble. But when we say the choir, we mean the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We mean the orchestra at Temple Square. We mean the bells on Temple Square, which is our 28-member bell ensemble, and all the volunteers and staff that go to support that. So we kind of use that, the choir, as a shorthand. But when we talk about that, we're really referring to all those people.
Which is interesting because that's quite a few groups with diverse talents.
It is, yeah.
Such an amazing group to be a part of. Do you ever sing with the choir?
Yes, I do get to sing with the choir occasionally. Before I came to work with the choir, my avocation, my hobby was singing. I've been a soloist with the Southern California Mormon Choir when I lived in Los Angeles. But I tell people that my job is a little bit like being a golf pro and not getting to go on the course. But I do take advantage of the fact that we have an extensive training program as part of the choir's audition process that we call the Temple Square Chorale. And that ensemble is about 120 singers, and they rehearse every year from January through April, and they perform a concert. The last Temple Square Chorale concert was just 2 weeks ago. And I usually take the opportunity to sing with the chorale. So I'm the only person ever not to graduate from choir school.
Well, that's wonderful you get to be involved with the Temple Square Chorale. That's wonderful. Then you get your musical outlet.
Yes. And, by the end of the 4 months of Temple Square Chorale, I've had my fix of singing for a while. And the choir members have a very demanding schedule. You know, they rehearse every Thursday from 7 to 9:30 and Sundays always from 7:30 to 10. And many times if we're preparing for a recording or a tour, they'll rehearse until 11:30 or 12. And that's just the basic. But during a tour week or recording like we're going to do next week, they will be here every evening from 6:30 until 10, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two recording sessions on Saturday from 10 to 5:30, and then they'll be back on Sunday for the broadcast. So sometimes being a member of the choir and orchestra can be a very grueling experience.
That's a rigorous schedule.
The standard is very high. President Hinckley, when he was the advisor of the choir during his presidency, said that he wanted the choir to be the highest exponent of the choral art in all the land. So that is quite a charge from the prophet of the church, and that expectation is still there. That high expectation is what we strive to achieve.
And I've heard that a lot of times the choir will perform a piece that they've never rehearsed before. Is that true, or is that
not quite
folklore?
So if the choir knows a piece very well, for example, like Battle Hymn of the Republic or Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, they will have very little rehearsal time. And rehearsal time is at a premium, and so they don't spend a lot of time on music that they know. But generally, if we're doing a broadcast, there's always a full run-through before, so they will do it. But sometimes it's on very little rehearsal.
So there's 360 people in the choir, and what about the orchestra at Temple Square?
Well, the orchestra is always a function of what kind of music we're doing, and even within a given concert, the size of the actual players can vary. But when we go on tour, we take 65 members of the orchestra with us, and a usual orchestra ensemble for a broadcast would be between 80 and 85 players.
Oh, that's amazing. And all of these people are volunteers, right?
They're all volunteers, the choir and the orchestra members. And, you know, sometimes when we have guest artists come, they know the choir by reputation. Of course, the choir has been around for hundreds of years. But Nathan Gunn, for example, was completely blown away when he realized the quality and caliber of our orchestra and that they were all volunteer players.
They are amazing musicians. I've heard them, some of them play outside of
And the orchestra is sometimes like, they're like machines. I mean, because they don't get a lot of rehearsal. Sometimes we call it singing and playing from wet music. Sometimes they'll put a piece of music that's just been finished being written and they'll put it right in front of them and they just play it. It's utterly amazing to me.
That's amazing. That's really impressive. So how do people try out for the choir?
There's a rather rigorous and lengthy audition process for the choir. It's in three phases, and I'll try to summarize them. I could talk about it for a long time, but there are three phases. The first is they have to submit an application. Now, we should even preface that by saying to be a member of the choir, you have to fulfill three obligations. One, between 25 and 55 years of age, you have to live within a 100-mile radius of Salt Lake City, and you need to be a member in good standing of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So the first phase is to fill out an application to get your bishop's recommendation. And then to prepare an audition CD or tape according to some specifications that are in our application package. So that's phase one. Those applications are due by the middle of August each year. After the August 15th deadline, the CDs are reviewed by Mac Wilberg and Ryan Murphy, our music director and associate music director. And from those, people are invited to the phase two, which is a 2.5-hour written and oral exam that tests their musical skills proficiency. Now, you don't have to be a PhD in music to pass the test, but it does help separate people who have good musical proficiency for those who struggle a little bit. If you score 80% on that test or higher, then you could advance to the third phase, which is the in-person audition. And you will come and sing for Mac and Ryan. They will test your vocal range. They'll play a piece of music without your part, and you'll have to read your part. If you pass the third phase, then you're accepted into the Temple Square Chorale that we talked about a few minutes ago. And you have an obligation then for 16 weeks, every Tuesday, every Thursday, 100% attendance. On Tuesdays, you sing with the Temple Square Chorale and rehearse a masterwork. We did the Poulenc Gloria, this last concert. On Thursday, you attend what is essentially a graduate-level course in vocal production. We teach you how to sight sing, the rehearsal techniques, deportment for television, music theory, how to be a responsible singer, how to accept your role within the choir, and we also train you administratively for some of the things out of our choir handbook, so that at the end of those 16 weeks, you take a final exam, you perform the final concert, and if you do all of that, then you could be a member of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. So it takes about 9 months start to finish.
The choir launched the YouTube channel on October 30th of 2012, so that's been about 6 months. Mm-hmm. What's the story behind the choir's desire to create a YouTube channel, and can you tell us about maybe some of the results that you've seen?
Certainly. When we launched the YouTube channel, it was a little bit challenging because there was a lot of rogue content, if we can call it that, up on YouTube that was of the choir but not produced by the choir. And a lot of people thought the choir was already on YouTube because you could go on and Google it and come up with all sorts of videos. But we didn't have an official presence. We didn't have our own YouTube channel that was branded officially with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Part of the reason that it took the choir a little bit longer to get there is that we sing copyrighted music. So we have to have the right permissions to put that content up on the air. And the internet was a brave new world, and we had to figure out the right way to do it at an appropriate cost. But we were able to figure all that out. We have a wonderful partner in California who helps us with the music licensing. And with that behind us, we were able to propose the creation of the channel. It was warmly received by our church leaders. So we set about all the mechanics to put it up there. The content that's on the YouTube channel is a variety of videos, but principally the music and the spoken word episodes. So we have a 30-minute broadcast that airs each week, as well as the individual tracks. And our YouTube channel is youtube.com/MormonTabChoir. Interestingly, only about 5% of the people that listen to YouTube content do so at that site. Many people are listening on Facebook or on other recommended music lists or a variety of different places. But you ask also about how well the channel has done. It's exceeded all of our expectations. I looked this morning and we've had over 2.2 million views, over 25,000 subscribers, people who sign up and want us to tell them every time there's new content. We reach into over 55 countries around the world, and we have attracted a much younger demographic than we have hitherto had. And so we're just really excited about all of that. And for those who count pennies, we're under budget.
That's wonderful. Those are great numbers. So many people are so excited to follow the choir, I think, to be able to have that access and inside view onto what you guys are doing.
Exactly. The beauty of YouTube is that people can comment on the videos. And we have people all the time saying, I am so thrilled to be able to listen to the broadcast. I used to be able to listen to it where I lived before, but I'm in a foreign country or I'm in a different time zone. And now I can listen to the broadcast whenever I want. And it's just wonderful. And another interesting fact is that even though people can listen anytime they want, they like to listen on Sunday.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you mentioned that music and the spoken word is on the channel. And then also, I've noticed there are some fun videos as well that you've done with the songs.
Exactly. We have done a number of videos over the years before we had our own YouTube presence, we partnered with our colleagues down at BYU Television and did a number of videos which are posted on their YouTube channel. But since we have our own channel now, we've been looking for opportunities to promote the CDs that we've done. One recently that was a lot of fun, we did in the context of the release of Teach Me to Walk in the Light, which is our latest release. It's a CD that's primarily music from primary songs. So we did one featured video, which is called Gives of the Little Stream, and it's just adorable.
And that's your favorite song?
Well, on that album, you know, trying to choose your favorite song is like saying which children do you love the most.
Right.
But on that particular album, Gives of the Little Stream is one of my very favorites.
For our listeners who haven't seen that, if you want to check that out, be sure and look at their website. It's a good one to watch. Now, the choir's going on tour here coming up soon, June 12th through June 20th of this year, is that right?
That's right. We call it the Upper Midwest Tour. The choir goes on tour every other year because, again, the choir and the orchestra are all volunteers, so they have to take their vacation time to go on tour.
Oh,
so
impressive.
1 year for the choir, 1 year for the family is kind of how we think about it. This year we're going to Columbus, Indianapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, Wisconsin, and then Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So if somebody wanted to follow the choir or either on social media or actually come to a concert, how would they do that?
Well, if they want to find out information about the tour, they should go to our website, which is mormontabernaclechoir.org. And we have a tickets and events portion of the website. So they could look there, and there are links to all the venues so they could procure their tickets. We're going to be covering the tour probably better than we ever have before. We always have in-depth stories that choir and orchestra members actually write themselves about each day of the tour. We now have a social media manager. Her name is Heidi Green, who works on the choir full-time as part of her assignment. And she will be doing a variety of things. We'll be posting on Facebook at least once or twice a day. We'll be tweeting probably hourly. We have a Google Plus channel, and so we'll be doing a couple of Google Hangouts during the course of the concert tour. So a lot of ways to follow the choir while we're on tour.
Even if someone isn't able to be there physically, they really could follow the choir through much of the tour.
They could follow the choir and have a really good time doing it.
Well, that's great. How exciting. Are there any behind-the-scenes details that you can tell us about the tour?
Touring with the choir is a pretty amazing venture. When people find out what I do for a living, they say, oh, do you get to go with them on tour? And I say, well, yeah, I get to go with them, but it's a lot of work. It is not a vacation. We work, probably 17 to 18 hours a day when we're on tour. But it's wonderful and very, very fulfilling. Some of the things that people might find really interesting is the logistics of how we travel with the choir. We take about 320 choir members. Not everybody can go because they can't get off work or for whatever family reasons they might have. 65 members of the orchestra. We take about 40 of our volunteer staff, about 5 of the paid staff. Choir and orchestra members, of course, are paid for by the choir. But if a spouse or another guest wants to go, they pay a fee that covers their expenses. And so all told, it's about 600 people that travel with us. So when we go, we fly out by charter aircraft. It takes 3 airplanes. We go on 11 buses. We have 4 semis that take our gear.
Oh, my word.
With all the wardrobe, with all the sound system, lights, the trusses to hold up the sound equipment, the risers, the choral shell, all of the pieces that go with it.
That's amazing.
So, and then there are 4 rider trucks that carry just luggage.
And, oh my goodness.
And it's a very complicated process of how the luggage gets from the trucks to the ballrooms and the hotel rooms where it's sorted. Most of the time, our large luggage is taken up to the room so that when we check in, it's already there. Choir members usually take a piece of carry-on luggage with them. So it's a very complicated process to get the choir from A to B on tour.
So when these people are watching you in these different states, if they only knew what went into getting them there.
Well, it was such an interesting story that in 2009, BYU Television sent a crew and they went on tour with us. They filmed a video that it's actually available for purchase and it's shown on BYU Television. It's called One Voice, On Tour with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and it details all the aspects of what it takes. But it took us an hour to tell the story.
Wow, that's fascinating. I haven't seen it, but it sounds like something I need to watch.
I think you'd enjoy it.
Get the real behind the scenes. And so after the choir tours, it sounds like the next big concert for you is the Pioneer Day.
Yes, we'll come back. We get back on a Friday. We'll still have a regular broadcast to produce on the 23rd. And then the following week, we have a special for the 4th of July for Music in the Spoken Word. And then on the 19th and 20th, we have our Pioneer Day concert.
Now, for those listeners who aren't in Utah, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in the Pioneer Day concert? Because it's, I know the Christmas concert is the big concert, but I love the Pioneer Day one as well.
Well, the church is integral to early Utah history. And so Pioneer Day is a state holiday here in Utah that celebrates the arrival of the first pioneer company. And the church has also wanted to retain it, the remembrance of that. And so that, you know, they have a big presence in the Pioneer Day parade, and the choir has done a concert for many, many years. It started out as actually a devotional fireside that the First Presidency sponsored, and then over time it became more appropriate for it to be a concert. The concert this year is the 19th and 20th. So it's usually the weekend that coincides or precedes Pioneer Day.
Anything else we should know about that you guys are working on or?
Well, everyone's always interested to know who our guests are going to be.
Yes.
And while I can't tell you who the guests are because they haven't been announced, I can tease you a little bit to tell you that the announcement will be made in early June.
Okay.
And our guests this year, we're going to be featuring up-and-coming Latter-day Saint performers. And I think people will be pleasantly surprised to see who we've picked.
That sounds like a fun concert. So many fun things to look forward to with the choir.
Well, and after that is Christmas, and we always have a few surprises. You never know who's going to be performing with the choir, and there are still a few little surprises up our sleeves for this year. I can tell people that we usually make that announcement in October, so stay tuned.
I'm excited for it already. Those are the best tickets in town if you're here locally in Salt Lake City.
Well, and around the world, people fly in from all over. They beat down the door. When can I get the tickets? I've got to make my airline reservations. And so we know the demand, and we're thrilled for it.
What a great tribute to the choir, though. That's a wonderful compliment to the work that you're doing.
Well, these fabulous volunteer musicians and everything that they do and their artistry and the leadership of the people that conduct. And we have just a tremendous team of people that all pull together to make the music what it is.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank
so
you,
glad
Lisa.
To have you here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's time to close once again, but I thank you for joining us today. If you have any suggestions, comments, or inspirational stories you'd like to share with me, send me an email directly at mormonchanneldaily@ldschurch.org, or you can post on our Facebook wall today. This has been another episode of Mormon Channel Daily, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the song of the day that I'd like to leave you with today is called The Impossible Dream, featuring none other than the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Thanks again for joining us today. Have a wonderful day.